Talk Breakfast. The kickoff with Steve Hothersall.
Radio City Talk.
Now, you may remember a few months ago, we had an intrepid runner in the studio who was attempting to emulate the feat and the path of Forrest Gump's run within his famous film. Rob Pope came in, started talking to us about why he was doing it. And at the time, we all went, yeah, are you sure? Well, Rob has actually done a couple of legs of this now and joins me again. Good morning to you, Rob.
Good morning.
Right, so the first time you came back, just remind people, so the first bit you did from the film was from where to where?
That was from Mobile, Alabama to Santa Monica in California.
Okay, and that finished in?
November the 30th last year.
Yeah, and you popped in to see me just after that, and at the time you were thinking, oh, I might be able to get back out by the end of December and start the next leg of the run, which was to be from?
Santa Monica to Maine.
Oh, which is how many miles?
That was about 4,000, yeah, probably about just under 4,000 miles.
I had so many people at the time saying to me, was he really doing that amount of miles? Yes was the answer. You came back with some incredible stories from the first leg, so to speak. But you have completed the second leg now.
And a chunk of the third as well.
Oh, have you? You've already started on the third. Right, let's just put it into context. You were doing it all to raise money for the World Wildlife Fund initially, and there was another cause.
Peace Direct as well.
Right, okay, so two important causes. You had to fund yourself, so for the first couple of legs you've done yourself. You went out there with your girlfriend. She was a bit of sort of support as you were going along, so she was in the truck or the car next to you.
Yeah.
The second leg has had a slightly different feel to it, is that right?
Yeah, well, basically, we could only afford to keep Nadine out there until the 22nd of March, which got us as far as Jackson, Tennessee, which is midway between Memphis and Nashville, to give a bit of context. So we dropped her off at Nashville Airport, and then I got the Greyhound back to Jackson, where I started pushing like a baby buggy containing all my stuff, and carried on in the planned direction.
You've been pushing a baby buggy running?
Yeah.
So you've not just had to run, you've had to run with a buggy to push at the same time?
Yeah, I've done about 2,500 miles that way.
Oh, right. It's even more astonishing the more we hear about this. So that second leg, just remind us again, started at?
That started at Santa Monica Pier.
And did you think to yourself at that point, why am I continuing with this? Or were you thinking, I achieved the first one relatively comfortably, physically I got through it okay. You were quite confident about yourself.
Yeah, well, so athletically wise, I started off with the idea about 10 years ago, just wanting to run across America. But like, this route only ever really got conceived in relation to try and make it as successful as possible for the charity. So starting off again, sort of after a little break, sort of, you know, the motivation was there. I knew why I was doing it. Doesn't necessarily make it any easier, but you know why you're doing it. The break was like probably the worst thing that could happen, because like sort of over Christmas, you know, you don't do that much running, and it was almost like starting at being square one again. And of course, you've got to go sort of, you know, over the mountains into Death Valley, where, you know, it's meant to be the hottest place on earth, but it snowed while we were there.
Wow. So there was a little bit of a mental barrier going on. I have to say, I remember you talking from the first leg about a couple of the physical problems you had. You did have a couple of major issues at the time, didn't you?
Yeah, like sort of, I was most, those niggles that I had sort of, you know, I gradually adapted to them. The big problem that I had sort of this time was when I was just crossing from Arkansas into Memphis, going over the Mississippi again, and I tore a quad. So I didn't realise. I was actually, I was listening to the Liverpool match the previous day, and I had this pain in my leg, and I pushed through it. It was only when the next day, and I ran through it again, and I had to sort of literally walk the last 15 miles of the day, and the next day my leg had swollen up, and I just couldn't even walk 30 metres for the next like sort of 3 days. And so I was wondering if that was the end then, but I gradually, so the next day after that, I walked 27 miles. The day after that, I walked 33 miles. And
so
then
you tore a quad, and within 4 days, you walked 27 miles.
Yeah, you're tearing a quad, there's always like a grade to it. When I first did it, it was like grade one. Grade three is going all the way through. And I think I basically had a low grade two tear, and
it still doesn't sound very pleasant.
It wasn't
it? Right. Let's give some of the key markers on this second phase of the run. If you look back at it now, where were some of the big points for you within this run?
So the the first night when I was camping for the first time, I met a chap who was running from, well, he was walking actually from Washington to Santa Monica, and he said, just knock on people's doors and ask if you can like camp in the garden. So I knock on this fella's door and he just see the blinds go and he's like, who is it? And I'm like, it's
Rob from the Wirral.
Well, yeah, that's what I literally just said. I said it's Rob from England. Is it, you know, who was I? And so it takes about a minute for him to answer the door and he goes, what do you want? And I like explained what I was doing, what I, you know, just wanted to camp in his front garden. He's like, have you got any weapons on you? And I'm like, well, no, I'm like British, just my razor sharp wit. And then he just goes, good, because I got plenty, and just pulls out this 10-inch carving knife from behind his back. And I'm just like, oh, my God.
Oh,
I went, don't worry, mate, it's all right. I'll go down the road. And he then said, I'll see if my wife can put you up around the back of the village store because, like, you know, you're not camping here. And then he comes into the goes into the house, comes back about a minute later and goes, hang on, I trust you. Come in. And I'm like, I'm not sure if I want to come in.
I was going to say, yeah. At which point you were thinking, please let me go.
Yeah, exactly. But like, he had this like tiny little daughter with him there, you know. And I go in there and he cooks me chili and then ends up letting me stay in his caravan, which is nice.
Unbelievable.
So he
pushed it amidst all his gun stash and his weapons that he's got in there as well. So that was quite early on.
Yeah, nice to be. And so then you start settling into it. Got to Nashville, which is an amazing city. Really wish you could spend more time there. Pushed through sort of, then had to go to over the Appalachians, which pushing a buggy that weighs like probably about, you know, 40 kilos, 50 kilos isn't fun.
Well, what sort of buggy is this? I'm envisaging
like
a pram.
Three-wheeled, like sort of, you know, like a jogging stroller, you know, so something like you'll see people running around the park sort of with the kids in it, you know. And so it allows me to have like sort of a big hold all in it. You know, you can strap some water to like the foot plate of it, you know, a little bag sort of on the handles at the back. And it's pretty much got like all my clothes in it, tent, sleeping bag, you know, bits and bobs you need just for daily maintenance. And
I presume it changes the running style as well, doesn't it? Because you always have to bend over a little bit to hold the buggies.
You have to concentrate on your form, especially when you're going up a hill, because the temptation is to really bend over it, but you've got to try and stay upright because it starts doing your back in. But of course, you can't swing your arms naturally. Sometimes you get the perfect gradient where you can just sort of let it roll in front of you and run a little bit. But since like I've been back and been running without it, because I'm trying to do a half marathon a day since I'm back, I've actually got a tendonitis in my right arm just from actually, you know, moving the thing continually. So it was a bit weird. But yeah, you get used to it. It was hard to start with, but now like it doesn't bother me.
Right, so you said Nashville and you went on through the...
Through the Appalachian Mountains. Yeah, like sort of, fortunately, sort of it wasn't too cold or
anything
like that.
Tough, lonely?
Yeah, it is. Like, but, you know, of course, these days, sort of with the internet and stuff, you can still keep in touch with people and... like stayed in this amazing house in rural Virginia where like an old lady who used to look after local cyclists. She died a few years ago, but she just gave a house over. So you just turn up there and there's got like full of local cycling memorabilia. I consider myself to be a cyclist. I had three wheels. That was allowed, you know. And so, and then after that, it was Washington. So ran outside the White House. Donald didn't come out. But like we did get like sort of intercepted by two Secret Services agents who posed for a photo with us, gave me the number and said, if they get into any trouble in America, just call this number. So I've been tempted to just call it anyway.
What, you honestly met a Secret Service agent?
Yeah, they came.
Did they approach you or?
Yeah, they're just outside, like looking after the, you know, the White House, and he came over and asked what I was doing, like in an interested way rather than a, you know, what are you doing way. And he said, this is just too cool. And he got his mate over and sort of, he was like, this is brilliant. Gave me a little Secret Service badge for the buggy. and sort of, I was getting a photo, got an Irish mate who lives over there. And we're taking some photos and they just come over and go, we're getting in this. And I was just like, oh yeah, mate, you're more than welcome. So from there, like I headed up because I was facing a bit of a race against time because I was entered in the Boston Marathon as well. So I got almost as far as Boston before I had to, a local runner drove me the rest of the way. because the quad had sort of delayed me by about a week. And so, yeah, did the Boston Marathon, which is great. Did it dressed as full Forrest Gump. And so if anyone ever does a marathon in the future and doesn't dress as Forrest Gump, they're an idiot, because the reception you get off everyone is fantastic.
Well, I should say, for anyone at home who can't see you, you have become Forrest Gump, because... If anyone's seen the film and they see that beard that he grows because he's been running for so long, that's what Rob's got now. He's literally got an untouchable beard. How long have you been growing that now?
Since September the 14th.
Yeah. Believe me, it looks proper Forrest Gump now. And you're not going to get that cut, are you?
No, not. The muzzy needs trimming at the moment, but that's the only thing that has been touched since the start, you know.
So you did that marathon.
So, yeah, then I had to get back to where I finished in New Jersey. And
just
then,
to make sure you did the exact route.
Yeah, exactly. And then so ran to New York, like sort of ran through Times Square, which is pretty cool. I'd actually dropped the buggy off at where we were staying and then just went through without it because it would have been a nightmare. Ran through Central Park with the John Lennon Memorial as well, which is cool. Through Yankee Stadium and then just headed north and eventually got to Boston again. Where I did the marathon course again on my own, which is quite surreal. You don't normally have to navigate during a marathon, but this one, that was ace doing it. And then headed up to the Marshall Point Lighthouse in Maine.
What are you navigating on if you're running yourself? How are you finding yourself on the correct route all the time?
Just Google Maps, generally.
On my phone.
Just doing the walking directions. Like, sometimes it's a nightmare. Like, sometimes it sends you up the wrong track. Like, on the way back from Maine, it just put me up this mountain, basically, that was, the track was, like, mud and rocks and streams, like, calf-deep streams. And, like, so you're pushing the pram through this and you're thinking, oh, God, this is, I'm just going to get swept away, you know. When you're doing that, like, sort of it's spring, but it feels like winter there, you know. It's not exactly pleasant.
How did you feel when you crossed the finishing line this time?
In Maine, that was pretty emotional. Like, sort of, that almost felt like it could have been an end, you know. It would have been a perfect end, actually, if I wasn't already planning on going on and had that in the back of my mind. But like, I had a friend over from Wales, and he'd rode the last sort of 7 days on his bike with me as well. So it's nice for a bit of company. And I ran past him just at the end and I went, mate, I'm in bits. And he just looked at me and just went, I know.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
So the plan now is, you still haven't finished this, have you?
No, I ran back to Chicago from Maine, and that's like currently where the pin's in the map. And so when I was there, I went to a Chicago Cubs game at Wrigley Field, which is great. I've been a Chicago Bears fan since 1985, ever since the Super Bowl. They started showing it on Channel 4 with Frankie Goes to Hollywood at the start, And then in Chicago's Bears ground, Soldier Field, 3 days later, they were U2 were playing there as well. And so I had a telly interview there and I just thought, I want to get a ticket for this. And sort of plugged it. And this local guy heard the story and he's just like, I'm taking this fella to U2. And he just messaged me. And then, got a ticket.
What a highlight. Brilliant.
It was brilliant. It's like just one of the best gigs ever.
Right. So when are you hoping to go back out and how are you going to achieve it? You need a little bit of backing to maybe make this happen.
Yeah, like we've got enough money to get us back out there and probably to carry on for the first month. And that's going to be on July the 2nd we go out there. But like I said, we've probably spent we've blown whatever house deposit we had. I think we spent about like sort of 30 grand on it so far. There's nothing beyond that. We're thinking this is a bit of a Scouse success story, and you know, any local companies who want to sort of, you know, tie themselves up with it, we'll certainly get you on the website and anything you do to help us keep going towards San Francisco and beyond. And raising the money that we want to do for the two charities, that'd
absolutely
be great.
That's the important thing. What's the website, Rob?
It's gointhedistancerun.com, and you can contact us from there.
Brilliant. Gointhedistancerun.com. Brilliant to see you again, Rob.
You too.
Make sure you come back after the next next leg.
Definitely.
It's strange because it was like yesterday you were in here, and in that time you've run how many miles?
So from the start, it's 7,260.
How many miles is it around the world?
I think it's about 17,000. I might not get quite that
far. You're nearly halfway around the world.
Yeah.
Rob Pope, amazing. Marathon and more runner. Superb stuff. If you want to help him out, you heard the website there. We'll put a link on our Twitter feed as well. This is Radio City Talk.
The Kickoff on Radio City Talk. Your one stop for Merseyside sport.
This is Radio City Talk.